Jeremiah 29. And I'm going to spend, even though it's not all that long of a chapter, I'm going to spend some time on it because it's one of the really critical chapters in the second half of the book. Because it just speaks to us so clearly. Because what Jeremiah, basically Jeremiah is writing them a letter, the ones in exile, the ones in Jerusalem, is writing them a letter about what's happening to them. Because they're kind of like us. We live in a society that doesn't appreciate Christianity, and much of society despises Christianity and godly people. If you want to make a lot of people angry, just tell them that you're a Christian and you believe in the Bible. And boy, that will upset a lot of people. Well, God's people back during Jeremiah's time, they're going into exile into a country that's kind of like America, that doesn't, in the worst case, hates them and persecutes them. And we're going to see that. So a lot of what Jeremiah is going to be talking about in this chapter and some other chapters goes right along with the book of Daniel, because remember, Daniel's in the same circumstances. Daniel's been taken into captivity. Remember, him and his three friends are in Babylon. So Daniel and Jeremiah kind of need to be studied at the same time because they address the same issues. How does a God-fearing person live in a godless society? Because that's exactly what Jeremiah is going to talk to these people about, and that's what Daniel addresses in the book of Daniel, is how do you do that? What extent do you live in that society? You know, what's permissible and what's not? And we see that in Jeremiah, and we see that in Daniel also. Also, we see here in this chapter that Jeremiah is answering the question that some of the exiles are asking, and the question the exiles are asking is, where is God? Why is God letting this happen? Why are we being sent into captivity? Why didn't He stop the armies and so forth? Even though Jeremiah had already told them why. He's told them repeatedly, you didn't listen to God through the prophets. You kept going after idols. You kept following, idolatry of all kinds. And that's why God's doing this. So He's already told them many times. Well, now He's really addressing them in the first half of this chapter, which again is pretty much just like a letter that Jeremiah is writing to them, explaining to them why this is happening. So that's why he's kind of answering this, or he's answering the questions by writing them this letter. Remember, they go into exile. The final group goes in like 587 BC, and that's when Jerusalem is destroyed and the walls and the temple and everything. But in the preceding years, in the 10 years before that, you know, that's when Daniel and his friends and some others go into, like Ezekiel. You remember Ezekiel goes in the second round. Daniel goes in the first round and Ezekiel in the second round. They go to different parts of Babylon. But this is all the same issue. So I guess really Daniel, Ezekiel, and Jeremiah all need to be studied together because they're all the same time frame. Same people, same circumstances, and all of that. So this letter is to tell the people what's really happening. So he begins in Jeremiah 29 by saying, now these are the words of the letter that Jeremiah the prophet sent from Jerusalem to the remainder of the elders who were carried away captive, to the priests, the prophets, and all the people whom Nebuchadnezzar had carried away captive from Jerusalem to Babylon. So this is what, like I said, from 597 BC on, these captives have been taken from Jerusalem to Babylon. And so they've already been there, some of them, at least for a while. So it says, this happened
after Jeconiah the king, the queen mother, the eunuchs, the princes of Judah and Jerusalem, the craftsmen and the smiths had departed from Jerusalem. So if you go back and look, there's already been more than 3,000 Jews who had been taken captive. So there's already 3,000 of these people in exile in Babylon. They're already there. So he says he's specifically addressing it to the priests and the prophets and the elders and so forth, the leaders of the people. So he says, the letter was sent by the hand, and he talks about the people, Elisha the son of Shaphan and Gemariah the son of Hilkiah, whom Zedekiah king of Judah sent to Babylon, to Nebuchadnezzar king of Babylon, saying. So again, this it says, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all who were carried away captive, whom I have caused to be carried away from Jerusalem to Babylon. So this is the letter, this is what it says, and this is what he is essentially telling them that they need to do. All right. Now remember, he's already told them some of this in the first place. He's already told them that they're going to be taken captive and that this was going to happen. They already know all of this, but he's still writing them a letter. And this is what he says, this is what you need to do. Don't listen to anybody else but me, because I'm telling you what Jehovah says. This is what you need to do. Build houses and dwell in them, plant gardens and eat their fruit. So he says, that's what you need to do. You need to stop thinking that you're just very quickly going to pass through Babylon. It's going to be over. No, he says you need to take up residence. Okay? You need to live in Babylon. And that means building houses, and that means planting gardens, and that means, you know, planting fruit trees. That means doing all of this. He says you need to think, you know, have this settled in your mind that you're going to be in Babylon a long time. You've got to get that into your mind, and that's what he's wanting them to understand. You're going to be there, and basically you're going to like form your own community. You're going to be living in a godless society. Okay, you're going to be living in a godless society. You're going to be living with people who don't believe in Jehovah, who don't believe in the kind of worship you do, who don't believe in the same moral and ethical code you believe in. Get used to it. That's what he's telling them. So he says, you're not going to be a refugee, you're going to turn into a resident. So you need to buckle down, live, build houses, have families, work, as if you're going to be there a long time. Now that this is something they didn't want to hear. All right? They did not want to hear that. And there's actually been some archaeological finds in what used to be Babylon showing that people actually did that. That you know, they had contracts for land and forms that were filled out on tablets showing that they were raising gardens and selling stuff. So many of them at least did settle down like they were supposed to. But again, they didn't want to hear it. But they needed to understand that they were going to be residents there for a long time. They would have children. They would have grandchildren. They just needed to live amongst these idolaters in an ungodly, idolatrous society. He says, take wives, verse 6, and beget sons and daughters, and take wives for your sons, and give your daughters to husbands, so that they may bear sons and daughters, that you may be increased there and not diminished. Remember that life must go on. Life must go on. He's telling them, don't retreat. You know, don't go into a monastery-like situation where you have no contact with the world. Because even though they were living in Babylon, he wanted them to try and influence as many Babylonians as possible to see that their religion was the real religion, that it was the religion of the one God. So they had a responsibility. They weren't to retreat. And so that's the first lesson we learn from Jeremiah 29 is, you know, we're greatly outnumbered in America. We're greatly outnumbered. But we're not supposed to retreat. You know, Jesus said you're to be salt of the earth, you're to be light of the world, you're supposed to let your light shine. Well, you can't do that when you're cloistered in a monastery where you have no contact with the outside world. Some people are saying that's what Christians need to do. All right, but that's exactly the opposite of what God told us and what He was telling them. You need to carry on. And He says that you may be increased there, not diminished. He wants them to increase their population. You know, don't think, well, I don't want to have children in this horrible society. Just the opposite. No. Have lots of them so that your population, your numbers will increase. That's what He's telling them they need to do.
So was He instructing them to intermarry? Or?
No, I think He's just talking about, yeah, I don't think intermarrying, because that would be a problem later in some of the later prophets.
To intermarry with those
right.
people, but to just go ahead and...
And have families and have go ahead and have grandkids and have this, because you're going to be there for 70 years. You're going to be there, you know, that long, two or three generations. So,
well, let's try to build up their population like when they left Egypt. You know,
yeah, exactly.
With the
right.
Millions.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what He's wanting them to do. Verse 7 is really a key verse in the whole book of Jeremiah. And if we want to talk about key verses in the book, this has got to be one of them, Jeremiah 29:7. And seek the peace of the city where I have caused you to be carried away captive, and pray to the Lord for it, for in its peace you will have peace. So here they've been taken captive. Friends and family have been killed by Nebuchadnezzar and his army. Their city's being destroyed. They're in exile. And what does Jeremiah tell them to do? Pray for the inhabitants of the city. Pray for the Babylonians. So there's lesson number two for us. We need to pray for our country. Because, he says, if the country has peace, you'll have peace. Now, doesn't it mean that Nebuchadnezzar was now a wonderful guy? No, he was not a wonderful guy. And the people in Babylon were not wonderful people. They weren't all God-fearing people by any means. So he says, pray for them because it's going to make your life better. It's going to make your life better. So that's what you need to do. Pray to God. Now, it's interesting. Remember, a few chapters before this, God told Jeremiah, don't pray for the Israelites. Don't pray for them not to be taken into exile. So He had told him, don't pray for the Israelites. Now He's telling them, pray for the Babylonians. So again, the Israelites are probably hearing things that are totally opposite than what they were expecting. But that's exactly what God is telling them. You pray for these people. You pray that you'll have peace, that the country will have peace, and that things will go well. So He's really wanting them, in a sense, to become missionaries in Babylon. You know, you're going to be there for decades. Do something useful with your time. Don't retreat, but instead, take the message to the Babylonians. Be missionaries to them. And, you know, it's certainly, like I said, I think a great lesson that we need. You would think the Israelites were probably thinking, you're wanting me to pray for Babylon? Shouldn't we be praying for Jerusalem? And God says, no. Don't pray for Jerusalem. Pray for Babylon. That's who you need to be praying for. So the Israelites, you know, were going to have and did have a bitter attitude toward the Babylonians. Let's turn to Psalm 137. And we'll read a verse or two there. Psalm 137. I think it's verse... Let's see. Yeah, 8 and 9. Last two verses in Psalm 137. If someone would read that for us. Psalm 137, 8 and 9. See, that was the attitude many of them had. They wanted Babylon to be destroyed, to have vengeance taking on them, as he and have the little ones dash against the stone. So there was this attitude among the exiles of being angry. You know, their mood, at least for some of them, was very, very bitter. And so they wanted vengeance on Babylon. But God is saying just the opposite. No, I want you to seek their welfare. Don't seek their destruction, seek their welfare. Again, goes completely against what they were thinking. You know, seek their prosperity, their welfare, or their peace. Because if you do, it's going to be better for you that you do it. So he says, going on in verse 8 then, "For thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, do not let your prophets and your diviners who are in your midst deceive you, nor listen to your dreams which you cause to be dreamed, for they prophesy falsely to you in my name. I have not sent them, says the Lord." I think we mentioned this last week. There were false prophets among the Jews who were saying, no, don't build houses, don't plant gardens, you're going to be coming home real soon. Jeremiah says, don't listen to any of them. They're liars. They're deceivers. They're sending you, you might say, the wrong message. So, "For thus says the Lord, after 70 years are completed at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you and cause you to return to this place." So he names it exactly. He says, 70 years... All right, you're going to be there. Settle down. Live, raise a family. Raise a garden, do all of this because you're going to be there for 70 years. But then he makes a promise after 70 years. He says, "I will visit you and cause you to return." And of course, that's what we read about with Ezra and Nehemiah. Them coming back. And that's what he, of course, wanted them to do. And that's, of course, exactly what did happen. This was something that he had promised way back in the days of Moses, that this would exactly happen. They would be taken in captivity, but they would be returned. So in verse 11 it says, "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope. Then you will call upon me and go and pray to me, and I will listen to you, and you will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart." So that's what he's been telling them about this. This is something he had told them way back in Deuteronomy. Let's go back to Deuteronomy, the fourth chapter. Let's see which verse I want to read. I know it was in the fourth chapter. I was reading it yesterday. Okay, I'm getting close.
29.
Yeah, that's part of it. If we go back to verse... ...27, and go down to verse 29, and it says, "And the Lord will scatter you among the peoples, and you will be left few in number among the nations where the Lord will drive you. And there you will serve gods, the work of men's hands, wood and stone, which neither see nor hear nor eat nor smell. But from there you will seek the Lord your God, and you will find him, if you seek him with all your heart and with all your soul. When you're in distress and all these things come upon you in the latter days, when you turn to the Lord your God and obey his voice, for the Lord your God is a merciful God, he will not forsake you nor destroy you nor forget the covenant of your fathers which he swore to them." And there's several places in Deuteronomy that say the same thing, that if, when you are scattered among the nations, if you listen and turn back to me, then I will come, just like Jeremiah says, visit you and bring you back. But they had to search for him wholeheartedly. Not halfway, not a half commitment, but wholeheartedly. So going back to verse 14, "I will be found by you, says the Lord, and I will bring you back from your captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and from all the places where I've driven you, says the Lord. I will bring you to the place from which I caused you to be carried away captive." Now see, some of them had ended up in Babylon, some of them in Assyria, some of them in Egypt. So they were in different nations. But he says, "I'll bring you back from all those nations and bring you back from where you were carried away, which is Judah and Jerusalem. Because you have said, 'The Lord has raised up prophets for us in Babylon,' therefore thus says the Lord concerning the king who sits on the throne of David, concerning all the people who dwell in this city, and concerning your brethren who have not gone out with you into captivity. Thus says the Lord of hosts, behold, I will send on them..." Now, right now he's talking about those people who are still in Jerusalem and in that area. Says, "This is what I'm going to do to them. I will send on them the sword, the famine, and the pestilence, and will make them like rotten figs that cannot be eaten. They are so bad." The people who stayed in Jerusalem were going to have a terrible time. And it was going to be awful. It says they're going to be like rotten figs. That's how bad they are. So he says, "And I will pursue them with the sword, with famine, and with pestilence. I will deliver them to trouble among all the kingdoms of the earth, to be a curse, an astonishment, a hissing, and a reproach among all the nations where I have driven them, because they have not heeded my word, says the Lord, which I sent to them by my servants the prophets, rising up early and sending them neither. Neither would you heed, says the Lord. Therefore hear the word of the Lord, all you of the captivity, whom I have sent from Jerusalem to Babylon." Now he's going back to the people in Babylon. "Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, concerning Ahab, the son of Koliah, and Zedekiah, the son of Messiah, who prophesy a lie to you in my name. Behold, I will deliver them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. He shall slay them before your eyes. And because of them, a curse shall be taken up by all the captivity of Judah who are in Babylon, saying, 'The Lord make you like Zedekiah and Ahab, whom the king of Babylon roasted in the fire, because they've done disgraceful things in Israel, have committed adultery with their neighbor's wives, and have spoken lying words in my name, which I have not commanded them. Indeed, I know, and I am a witness, says the Lord.'" So these two were false prophets, and they were going to be killed, executed, because of their lying prophecies, of their lies, of their deceit. All right, well, that's probably a place to stop. We'll finish that, Lord willing, get into 30 and maybe 31 next week, because 31 talks about the remnant, which is such an important part also of Jeremiah. Thank you very much.